An IEEE slide tape lecture. Mr. Rudolph H. Dyke, Fairchild R&D Laboratory, Palo Alto, California, presents a talk on self-scan photosensor arrays.
At the Fairchild R&D Lab, for the last year or so, we've been working on a self-scanned linear silicon photosensor array. And what I'd like to do today is describe that to you in the context of other technologies which bear on the problem. And I'll be talking mainly about different circuit structures rather than getting into the semiconductor processing technologies. And we'll actually be covering quite a wide range of circuit concepts. So I might warn you to hold your seat. It is sort of a quick switch from one to the next through part of this. There are about five different categories of approaches to self-scanned arrays. Just as preamble, I would like to say that there are a lot of different approaches to putting more than one light-sensitive device on one piece of silicon, and there are just a myriad of different jobs to be done. So I'll have to be talking about a fairly narrow range of applications and purposes in what I'm saying this morning. One general statement that can be made about self-scanned arrays, though, is that it gets you away from a whole lot of leads coming out. Let's look at the first slide. If this were in focus, you could see 320 photodiodes running along here on one monolithic chip. And these, I think, are on 2 mil centers or 2.5 mil centers. So the array is about a little over 1/2 inch long. And you could see three rows up here and three rows of here of bonding terminals, which are actually the ends of magnet wire that has been encased in a cable and plated on the ends. And then very fine 1 mil wires going from the monolithic chip down here. This is what we're trying to get away from. This is about a 5-year-old device, and for some applications it seems like it does serve a unique purpose. For example, it has the feature that that all of the signal outputs are coming out in parallel, 320 of them. Some people think that this is what they want, and maybe they do, but once they get a thing like this in their hands, then they have another problem. In the last 3 years, there's been a growing awareness that it is not only feasible to fabricate photosensor arrays in silicon with a great many elements per monolithic structure, but that it is also feasible to incorporate scanning circuits along with these sensors. Much of the early work needs to be attributed to Peter Noble, who was with the Plessy Company through much of this work. He and his colleagues came up with several structures using MOS shift register technology. And I'm going to be describing shift registers through the last half of the talk. There are various designs, and there's enough diversity that I think it's important to be comparing the advantages and disadvantages of those structures before we go on to more advanced designs. In silicon work, scanning self-scanned arrays really began in about 1964 when a paper was published from IBM on what they called the scanister. This had 75 elements in it and was scanned with a voltage ramp, which is a nice simple way of doing things, the way an electron beam is driven by a current ramp in an electron beam tube. But the structure was complicated, and the sensitivity was poor, and it didn't have very much impact on the field of optoelectronics. In the last couple of years, a bucket brigade structure has been proposed, and an MOS analog to the scanister has been proposed and described. And finally, a charge-coupled device has been announced from Bell Telephone Laboratories. And these are all useful for self-scanned array structures, so I wanted to describe them briefly to you so you could get a feel for the merits and disadvantages of all of them. The scanister consists of two rows of diodes connected back to back with a common line here and a resistive divider or bleeder structure along here. The structure that they reported, they didn't describe in great detail in their article, but it was quite a difficult thing to fabricate and involved putting two monolithic structures face to face in a multiple bump contacting scheme. The way this device works is that a voltage ramp is applied at this point to the circuit, while a constant bias is sustained between ground here and this point above the scan point. What this does is drive, at this point in time, you have a condition where all the photocurrents in each of these diodes, and both of these can be photodiodes in the structure, where all that photocurrent is flowing in one direction to the other point in time at the other end of the ramp, where all the photocurrent is flowing in the other direction. And so you have an integration as the ramp scans. And if you differentiate this signal, you get a true video output proportional where the amplitude of the signal is proportional to the light intensity pattern on this array. One of the things I mentioned was that it has low sensitivity. You only sense the photo signal at this point in the differentiated signal output as the voltage across this pair switches through zero. And the transition range is about 50 volts for a silicon p-n junction at room temperature. Corresponds to KT over Q. And so you don't have this device sensing light except during the brief instant that the ramp is going through. And most of the other structures that we'll be looking at have what is called storage mode sensitivity, and they're collecting light all of the time. It's not really a distinction between whether you want to use it for extremely low light level applications or not. It's really a distinction of whether you want to burn up the paper that you're trying to read or not. The number of elements that can be scanned, or the number of pairs that can be scanned with a single voltage ramp, is determined by the total breakdown voltage that both sets of diodes can sustain, divided by the switching voltage range, this 50 millivolt figure that I just gave you for a single element. So if the breakdown voltages are 100 volts, then you should be able to hook up 2,000 of these devices in series and drive them with one ramp and get one video signal out. And that's quite nice. That's probably more elements than you can get on one monolithic structure. But you can connect several monolithic structures together and have a very minimum number of leads. Well, that was in 1964, and not much happened after that. Now I'd like to switch to phototransistor arrays. These came along, this dual tree decoder structure over here connected to a linear phototransistor array of NPNs in one monolithic structure here was described in 1968 by a group from Westinghouse Laboratories. And actually, I'm cheating a little bit. They were describing a large two-dimensional array, but I wanted to simplify my talk this morning, so I reduced the problems all to simple linear arrays. And they can, in fact, be extended to two-dimensional arrays. So what they had here is a hybrid structure, which also minimizes the number of leads outside of the photosensor package. So it's an important consideration in the total self-scanned array problem. They have, I think it's discrete low-capacitance FET switches here. And then I think this is not, I'm quite sure this is not a monolithic structure. These are all discrete components. And finally, more discrete components. Usually a counter decoder structure is used for random accessing arrays. And here I'm just talking about serial addressing throughout the talk, like we had in the voltage scan, the ramp scan scanister. But a decoder structure is easier to implement when you don't have available parallel output shift registers. And there are there are virtually no parallel output shift registers available on the market just for general digital electronic processing. So this was 1968. And phototransistors have some very nice performance characteristics. They're not quite linear, but you get signal amplification right at the spot. So if you're interested in detecting a fraction of a picocoulomb of signal charge on these things, as you frequently are, we find, then you can amplify this by a factor of 100 before you take the signal off of this chip and go to a remote amplifier. So that amplification helps. And here's another way to approach the problem of scanning a linear photodiode array. At Fairchild, about this same time, we were looking at how to hook up MSI logic, T squared L logic, to linear phototransistor arrays. And this is a circuit which was put together. A 9311 is a 1 out of 16 decoder. And here, to scan 128 elements of a phototransistor, we needed what we thought were relatively few number of silicon chips, which could be put on a hybrid structure if one wanted, or if one did want to live with all these leads, one could wire it up externally. The hybrid structure I have indicated here, this was not built, it was merely proposed at one time. The 9311 chip is a 90 by 125 mil chip. So it turns out that if the elements of the phototransistor array are on 5 mil centers, then you can interconnect these leads quite nicely, and the leads never get crowded by closer than 5 mil centers. And besides these 8 decoder chips, you need a few extra chips which can be put out in this space, and the whole thing is fairly compact. Now I want to switch you back to another ramp scan scheme. This order in which I'm presenting different approaches to self-scanned arrays is pretty much chronological, except that I have left the MOS, the shift register approaches, for the end, because there we're going to go into more detail to compare fairly similar structures with each other. This was proposed by Ando and others at Nippon Electric just early this year. A monolithic structure shown here of 50 elements was built, and the circuit for this is shown here. You have simple photodiodes interconnected by a simple MOS structure, which is extremely simple to fabricate, as shown here. Structurally, it's simple. I don't know about the rest of it. And the output signal comes out here as a voltage output when a voltage ramp is scanned. I think the fact that they got performance, good performance, with a 50-element array is quite impressive, because the breakdown, the criterion for the number of elements that you can get in one row, is again like the scanister. The breakdown voltage, which in this case is the oxide, as well as the diode array, and the turn-on threshold, which I imagine they must have gotten down to the order of 1 volt thresholds on these MOS devices. They must have had of the order of 50 volt breakdowns, or say 2 volt thresholds and 100 volt breakdowns on the oxide, although the technical note did not describe those numbers. So they did achieve 50 elements scanned with this and reported the performance of that array. Next, we'll go to a bucket brigade structure. And what I'll describe here is a bipolar version. And more recently, I've heard about a MOS version, but I won't talk about that in this talk. The circuit for a bucket brigade consists of a string of NPN transistors connected together with a three-phase clock system as shown here. The capacitance here is inherent to the base collector junction, need not be an independent component. So it looks like it's fairly easy to integrate. This bucket brigade was described by Sangster and Tier of Phillips Labs last year, and was described primarily as an analog shift register, where you can put in input voltages varying anywhere between 0 and 1 volt, and what comes out the end after n clock shifts is a voltage essentially equal to what went in. They do not say how many gray levels they're able to discern, but they show a monolithic structure which they made, which has a line amplifier or signal processor, you might call it, at every 14th stage. So this gives the impression that there is some degradation of the analog signal, and it has to be reworked about every 14 stages. In that article, they claim that it's a very simple thing to extend their shift register circuit to a photoscanned circuit. This is what I thought of as I was reading that. It may not be what they thought of, but this is the sort of thing you could do. Here, every third element of this bucket brigade structure is made larger down here. And the base collector junction of this transistor is the photosensitive junction. And the remaining two devices in between are made smaller to minimize their photosensitivity, and the structure is modified to get approximately the same capacitance in this small area as we have in this larger area. And this structure would require junction isolation, so the exterior boxes shown here would be junction isolation or some other kind of isolation. The way this device works now is different from the ramp, and it's different from the shift register that I'll be talking about next. Here, if you put a positive bias on this, a negative bias would set this up. You can introduce pulses in here which will reverse bias each of these phototransistors down the line, each base collector junction of the transistor. And then after you have scanned that input information in, you set the array up, then you wait and let the PN junction here be discharged by the photocurrent incident on it. And then after this storage period, you scan again, and when you scan, each time you advance the clock from one phase to the next, you dump the charge from one element up to the next, and then across the next, and back, and so forth. And so you want to scan out as fast as possible, otherwise you'll get image blur during that time. So I describe this, I think it's convenient to think of this as a scan, store, scan mode of operation that is required for the bucket brigade. And the photo charge at one end of the array has to be pumped out sequentially through all the other elements down the line to get to the output of the device. And the video output would be connected to one of the last terminals here. Such a structure has not been built, to my knowledge, but it does seem that it would work, and it should have several levels of gray capability. This device works up to 30 megacycles, incidentally, which is extremely fast compared to the other structures to be looking at. The charge couple device is fairly novel, and G.E. Smith and company at Bell Telephone Labs like to think about the whole array as one device. So a whole array here is a charge couple device. There are no real components within it that you can talk about as distinct components very easily. The circuit diagram isn't even very easy to draw, and this is my own version of it here. Here we've got three clock lines connected to MOS islands sequentially like this. We have a dielectric here. And in a typical setup condition, we have a slight degree of inversion on two-thirds of the elements and a complete inversion on the third. And what you can do here, this incidentally was described in Bell Telephone Labs Technical Journal as a shift register structure, and the claim was made that it's obvious how to extend this to a photosensor array. So again, I did what was obvious, although the geometry may not be obvious. This is what I thought of in putting together a structure. Here, each photosensing element is made a little bit larger. We have an induced junction created under the metal or silicon or what have you, and a sensitive region extends around this by virtue of minority carrier diffusion in the inner p-type substrate. And then, and this operates in the scan, store, scan mode, just like the bucket brigade structure. You have to set up this condition by putting a series of pulses, well, just by biasing the clock suitably, pardon me. And then when you want to read it out, you have to ripple through the three clocks and push the charge, which during the storage time gets collected on this inverted region, which isn't indicated here, but it would be extremely close to the surface here. It gets pushed along to the next element and to the next and the next and so on, and is read out by a PN junction. Finally, you dump this charge into a metallurgical junction and read it out. You might not want to invert, or you might not want to deplete any of this, of these other elements during the storage mode, but this is the way they recommend using the shift register. The speed at which you can dump this out is important, since that's the, since while you're scanning this out is when you're getting the image smear. And so it's nice to know that from the physics of diffusion and the voltage drifts that you can get in between here, the charge pretty well moves over in about 25 to 50 nanoseconds. You can read out pretty fast. The shift registers that I wanted to compare in more detail than I'll have time for are basically two types. The MOSFET types are quite similar. The silicon gate, insulated gate FET, is significantly different. The first one is quite a conventional shift register structure, contains six FETs per stage. And four of these are transistors and two are resistors. And it takes two clock phases, two clock phase lines in, they all do, pardon me. The ratio of the clock rate to the sampling rate is two in each of these cases and one in the third case. Here's a conventional shift register, and the first clock pulse puts a data bit into the first half of the next stage of the shift register. The next clock moves this bit of information into the second half of that stage and gives you a signal out which can be connected then to a switch which discharges or recharges a photodiode and gives you a video signal out, as you'll see in a more complete structure a few slides later. This is the clock sequence that has to come in. This is the second MOS variation where RC time constants were introduced here with additional capacitances. Additional capacitance was introduced here so as to minimize switching transients, so the signal extraction problem would be made easier. Here's a low power shift register design. It takes a few more components, one more component per stage of shift register. Here's the end of one stage, and over here would be the end of the preceding stage. And this one only dissipates power during the brief interval that the clock pulses are on. So if these clock pulses are sufficiently narrow compared to the clock frequency, you can have considerably reduced power consumption compared to the previous array. The self-scan silicon array that Gene Weckler reported a couple of months ago from Fairchild consists of only four components per stage of shift register. And the clocks actually supply the power to drive this array in a scheme like this. This circuit had previously been employed in a thin film transistor structure by Paul Weimer at RCA, and quite impressive results were obtained there. However, I chose to restrict my comments today to silicon. The first structure that has been built up using the silicon gate technology was a 48-element array on 5-mil centers. And here are the photodiodes, here are the switches, and here are the shift register stages. These were separated physically so that in case we had to shield these from light with a package cover, we wouldn't damage the image falling on these photodiodes. The one clock pulse was brought in over here, and another one over here, and start pulse comes in over here. And these switches dump the charge from these diodes into a P-type diffusion, which is a drain line in this series of MOS switches. And the drain line then is the video output for this array. This shows what can be done with 48 elements of resolution in the horizontal direction with respect to gray level and resolution. The MTF of the device and the optical system this was taken with was over 50% just at the maximum spatial frequency of information. So we're getting very nearly the maximum resolution that we can out of the array this way. We didn't do any cheating in this way. We have square sensing elements, so we effectively have 48 elements of resolution in this direction too, although we actually scanned it more times, 270 scans. In conclusion, there are advantages and disadvantages to each of these structures. We feel quite excited about the silicon self-scanned array because of the compactness of the scan generator, and we're not worried too much about the power at this point because I think performance is more important than power consumption at this stage in the optoelectronics field.
In the Bucket Brigade device that we've studied, we don't need 3 out of 1 or 2 out of 1. We need only 1 out of 1 in the stages in order to shift, but we didn't have any photosensors in there. Is the three-phase setup that you have required if you put in the photosensors, or could you go to a two-phase or possibly even one-phase? It's asymmetrical. It took us a while to figure out, but it really works.
I didn't really devote enough time to this to answer that question fairly. It seemed to me that the signal charge would smear as you were reading it out unless you did it the way I proposed.
I see. The estimate that we can give you on the number of gray levels in a gray scale in having gone through more stages than the Philips people in Paris is it's going to be somewhere between 50 and 200 discriminable analog levels that you might be able to do at the end.
Could you say the number of elements in the string which this applies?
We think you can go to 50. We are not quite sure you could go done. We've done some refurbishing and recycling of this thing. And
within the group of 50?
Uh-huh.
These closing comments were made by Dr. Egon Loebner of Hewlett-Packard. This slide tape lecture was an IEEE activity in continuing education for its members.